You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bruin, everybody. Today's going to be a great episode as soon as this cat gets out of the frame and out from the microphone. Sebastian! All right, everybody. Brews and Bruins Podcast, the Hockey Podcast Network podcast presented by Bruins Diehards, maybe, and most definitely Pride Diehards, probably going to be renamed later. Sebastian's now on the cord, and this is great. There go the headphones, ladies and gentlemen. This is Al Naturel.
We should have had Sebastian.
Maybe
we
I should just restart at this point, and that'll be the cold open.
That's good.
What's brewing, everybody? Brews and Bruins Podcast, the Hockey Podcast Network podcast presented by Bruins Diehards, maybe, and definitely Pride Diehards, soon to be named later. I am Drew. I still have cockroaches in my apartment, so I'm out in the Lakes region in Maine. We got Cam Hasbrook in where he belongs in Maine, and Chris Gear where he belongs in California. This is actually a 24-hour telethon to try to get my landlord to not make me pay rent for the week that I have been displaced.
So I missed two episodes. You guys had Pete on. Jack retired, and Drew's got cockroaches now? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, he just said that, and Chris just didn't react, so I'm assuming that was mentioned in the pod.
Yeah, it was. We went over
it. Was that a part of the Pete and Peter Blackburn podcast, or is that part of the Jackpot?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was like in the cold open, so I know you didn't listen to it.
Yeah, I have not. I've been very busy, but it is actually on the list, mostly because of Pete, not because of you guys.
It was Drew saying he's had a bad day, and then Lancey's saying he had a bad couple weeks.
Yikes.
Or Drew having a bad week, Lancey saying he had a bad month, and then Pete saying he had a bad life. So
that's good. That's good. I don't think I can up any of those. So,
well, that's why I had said that Chris is doing well.
That's good. Happy to hear it. Chris.
But yeah, so we're here after games one and two of the Stanley Cup Finals in round one against the Maple Leafs, in case you're living under a rock. So I guess we'll give some reactions. Do we want to maybe start with beers, though? I was about to say, want to start with game one, but then beers came to mind. Anyone got anything?
Yeah. Cam, it's your birthday. You go first.
Yeah, I was going to say birthday, right. Boy.
I literally just walked in the door. I was away for a family wedding and then was visiting the fam, drove back, got home approximately 15 minutes ago. So I opened the fridge. The first thing I saw was Miller Lite. Felt fitting for a birthday. So quick review. Shouts to Lancey, 37s all around. Miller Lite. It's a drinkable beer that you can taste.
Yeah, I've got a
Sam Adams drinkable beer you can taste. We can't take that from them, can we?
I've got a Focal Banger from The Alchemist in Burlington, Vermont. I've reviewed this several times. This is my second to last one of these. I bought 8 of these beers like 3 months ago, and I'm slowly working through them on the podcast.
Nice.
It's bitter as hell.
That seemed tough to swallow.
I feel like it's getting more and more bitter as it sits in the fridge for longer. Not to mention, I have no idea how long this was sitting around at the liquor store that I bought it from. Drinkability, like a 4. Tasteability, it's got the like classic piney hops. And you can taste it. 32.
Nice.
I got a Down East. Won't spend too much time. Drinkability. At the moment, on this date, April 23rd, drinkability is going to be around a 26. Tasteability, 37, as always, or as most of the time, I suppose. Bergeron scores. I think, yeah, let's start with playoffs, and then I maybe want to get some Cam thoughts at the end on Jack Edwards, since we had our little Jack Edwards episode that hasn't been posted yet. Will be posted after this episode with me, Chris, and Lancey's reaction. So Cam, we'll get to have some original takes. But let's start with the playoffs here. Game one, Bruins win 5-1. Look really good. Just clicking in all cylinders, just clearly the better team. Game two, different story. What were your guys' thoughts in that game one as opposed to what you saw in game two from the Bruins?
Well, let me lead off with game one because I didn't watch much of game two, and I'll kick to you guys for game two thoughts. I felt like the Bruins didn't have as much control over game one as the final score indicated. Not like they played poorly or anything. And I don't agree with all the like deserve to win a meters or whatever that popped up on Twitter afterwards saying it was like 14% Bruins. Cause they rang the post a few times as well. So like really easily could have been 8-1, but also, you know, Austin Matthews hit the post a couple of times and there were some other posts on the other side. So it could have been a lot closer. But the thing that now having seen the result and, you know, gotten the general characterization of game two that kind of worries me about game one was that they had trouble finishing periods and had trouble in the third period as well. Closing periods and closing games, that's kind of been the hallmark of good Bruins teams. And then the hallmark of bad Bruins teams is not being able to do that. And so now I'm worried about that going forward.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think like we can zoom in more after this, but I think wide angle, whatever that thing is, it's kind of like the first two games have been sort of like a microcosm of I think the Bruins season as a whole, right? Like there's been flashes in both games. I think even the beginning of game one, or rather game two and a better part of game one from what I saw, granted I was mid-wedding streaming it on my phone. not like you see in the commercials. It was like reception. It was an okay situation. But it was a microcosm in the sense that they've looked really good at some points and looked just pretty average at other points. And I think that's kind of been the identity of this team throughout most of the season. There's been stretches where they looked like a really good kind of classic Bruins team that we've seen over the last few years. And there's been points where they've looked like a pretty average, maybe kind of wild card team that I think a lot of people expected them to be coming into the season. So I think as far as game one goes, from what I saw, I did kind of hear that Toronto was maybe not getting quite what they deserved. I also kind of have trouble believing that. Like it's a 5-1 hockey game. It's a 5-1 hockey game. Like hockey is a weird sport. Yes. There's a lot of balances, a lot of things like that, but at the end of the day, it's about the teams taking their chances, and the Bruins took 5 of them and Toronto took 1. Swayman looked great in net. I think, you know, from everything that I could tell, it looked like a game that they certainly deserved to win. Game two, I thought they looked pretty good in the first period. I think after that, they looked like shit, frankly. I thought it was just a pretty not urgent effort. I think Toronto really understood that if they were going to leave down 2-0, especially given the history of these two teams, that was going to be a very, very tough thing to come back from. And I think that Toronto was playing a little bit like they really had to win that second and third period. I don't think Boston felt that same urgency. And if they did, they certainly weren't playing like it. So I think that was pretty much what Montgomery had said after the game too, is that there wasn't enough urgency until really they went down. Once they went down, they actually started to look a little bit better. I think that's going to change, quite frankly. I think you're going to see a lot more urgency in game three. I'm not terribly worried. Look, it's Bruins, Toronto. It was never going to be a 4-game series. Probably wasn't going to be a 5-game series. This is destined to go, I think, 6 or 7. It's kind of the way this goes. I think, you know, from here, you just got to try to grab one in Toronto. Then you get 2 out of 3 at home. I feel pretty good about that. But yeah, I think from what I would say is the silver lining that I think I messaged in the Brews Cruise group chat here, was that I think Boston looked probably as flat as I've seen them all season in the second and third period. And Toronto still squeaked out a third period, 1-goal win. So, you know, I think if the Bruins can improve a couple of things, show a little bit more urgency, I think the forecheck was good at times, but they weren't able to create opportunities. There were long stretches in the second and third where they didn't quite have those dangerous scoring chances, which there were quite a few of actually in the first period. So I have a hard time believing that they're going to play that flat again for at least game 3 and hopefully in a game 4. I think Montgomery's probably going to rip a little bit of one. I would expect Marchand, especially as the captain, now to step up, have a really good game, hopefully get everybody motivated to practice. And look, I mean, I think after that 5-1 win in game 1, the history of these two teams, I don't want to say it was complacency, but I think there can be a little bit of like, play our game a little bit and things are going to go our way. That's not always the case in the playoffs. You have to face some adversity. You have to really dig in and pull out a little extra something that you didn't have during the regular season. My hope is that the back half of that game was a little bit of a kick in the ass, and we're going to see a lot more urgency out of this team in game 3 up in Toronto.
Yeah, sorry. I got a cat distracting me. See the cold open for details. I think game 1, I mean, the big highlight really was the depth scoring for me. You know, you get a goal from Brandon Scorlo. Sorry, correction there for the editor. So imagine if we had an editor and how much greater this would be.
I don't think any editing could fix this.
No, I don't think so either. But you had the depth scoring, and which carried into game 2, I suppose, in the form of geeky scoring. But I think in that first game, like the fourth line, especially with Beecher, Maroon, it was really good. I think all the depth threat, Boqvist has been very visible out there. Lacko's had some decent opportunities. And I think that it carried into game 2, kind of like you said, Cam. The first period was pretty good. They were pretty solid. And then it was just a steady slope downward from there. I think the second period, they weren't like all bad. Like, I think it was kind of 50% of the time you saw them kind of flat, and then 50% of the time they were on. And then by the third period, it was way off. It was like what we've seen in the regular season with them. So that's definitely concerning. You need to close out games, obviously. Now you put yourself in a position, you got to win one in their barn. I'm not concerned. Like you guys have said, and others have said, that it's a 7-game series usually, or 6 or whatever. So you're going to lose a couple, but you're in that position where you need to win one in their barn. I'm concerned if they don't win one in Toronto, but if you take one of the two, then I'm completely comfortable going back to, but not completely comfortable as in I'm not like panicking. You can never be comfortable. We've learned that against Philly, freaking reverse sweep. But I think, then, you know, 2 games in Boston and a 3-game series, I think the Bruins have the upper hand. They just got to work out those kinks.
Yeah. The one thing I'll add too from last night's game, game 2, was a little bit of a tongue in cheek. Like, you got to stay out of the penalty box. Obviously, the Bruins had a pretty significant power play advantage in game 1 that was evened out a lot more. Like, I think the officiating honestly was just pretty poor across the board yesterday. I thought the call on, there was the late cross check on Lauko, which, I mean, like, granted, was a cross check after the whistle. He definitely sold it a little bit. The Bruins were also penalized. There was like the hit on Tavares in front of the net, you know, net front battle that happens 1,000 times a game. There was Charlie Coyle getting punched in the face and somehow ending up with a penalty because they didn't want to call 2 against the Leafs because Bertuzzi also slashed somebody a second later. I think we talk about it every year. I don't understand. Like, it's the most asinine thing in the world to me that as soon as the playoffs come on, the referees decide that the penalties have to be even regardless of like which team is actually taking penalties. It just like gives an advantage to teams that play undisciplined hockey because they're going to end up with relatively even power plays. That being said, you took five penalties, regardless of how it happened. You can't be doing that in a playoff game. Obviously, Toronto's power play has been kind of on and off, but they have some very talented goal scorers on that team. There's no doubting it. Obviously, it's a talented hockey team. So you can't be giving those kinds of opportunities. On the flip side of that, Bruins' power play has actually been pretty good. It still looked fairly lethal in game two on that first period goal. I know that was a concern for this team a lot, especially down the stretch. The power play was pretty bad. But through the first two games, it's been pretty solid, which you need in the postseason in order to succeed. So kind of a plus and a minus there, but something to at least keep an eye on as we go into game three.
Yeah. Goaltending's been good. I mean, I feel like from what I saw, Linus was put in a really tough position yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm.
He had a couple really good stops too. That could have very easily been a
Tim Thomas-esque at times.
I saw some highlights there. Yeah. I mean, but for full disclosure, I watched most, or like I either listened to or watched most of the first period and then caught like the end of the third period. But, you know, gymnastics responsibilities had to be in dad mode.
He's a good guy.
But yeah,
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, he's a good guy.
I thought Swayman was awesome in game one. Obviously, Monty had decided, you know, maybe even long before months ago, like he may have decided last year.
Yeah.
That
after game seven,
he was sticking with the rotation. Cause I do think, you know, it wasn't the fault of the lack of rotation there. I mean, you got the far and away Vezina winner on your team. You want him starting in the playoffs, but also he was apparently injured. I'm talking about Ullmark at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think maybe going to Swayman, it was something that was stuck in the back of his head here. And I do think going to Swayman in game one was an interesting move, considering that Ullmark had been the better goaltender down the stretch, but Swayman had kind of fared better against Toronto this year. I guess fared better. He played three of the four games. They both did pretty well against Toronto, but yeah, I guess maybe just a guy who's been more familiar with this year's Toronto team gets the game one start. I don't really know what the thinking was there, but maybe it's just a sign that, yeah, Swayman's your 1A now, kind of
mm-hmm.
as we had kind of thought at the beginning of the year, you know, transitioning Swayman to being the 1A. And yeah, I thought he responded really well in a, yeah, that's a, he doesn't seem like the type of guy who gets rattled, but that is a tough spot going up against Toronto in game one of the playoffs, and responded well. And obviously Ullmark, another guy who doesn't really get rattled. So my whole thing on the rotation is get to 916 goalies over the course of the year. And this year, I think only one goalie was over 920. I think that was Hellebuck.
Hellebuck,
920. Mm-hmm. So like 916 this year in the NHL is not maybe as bad as it was.
Yeah.
By bad, I mean, as it was closer to average, maybe like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now that's pretty good stuff. Having two 916 goaltenders.
Yeah.
So to me, it doesn't really matter who you're sending out there. And I think a lot of people online were overreacting to, hey man, Swayman only let in one goal. You got to let him go out there. But then like, what do you do if he has another good game in game two and he hasn't started three games in a row all year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ullmark's cold coming off the bench for, I don't know. Yeah. I like the idea of rotating. My first thought was like, yeah, you let Swayman start game two and then you rotate to Ullmark game three no matter what. But yeah, I don't know. Who cares? I don't think it's whatever happens in this series, it's not going to be either of the goaltenders' faults.
Not at all.
Bruins lose.
I thought the ESPN, whoever broadcast yesterday, actually made a good point, or whoever the fuck, I think it was them who had the game, but
ESPN,
yeah, who said just as far as going for game two, I don't think Montgomery really could have made an incorrect decision. Same with game one. I don't know if you guys have heard, but
The bird is the word.
The chase for the Stanley Cup is on. And if you are looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of playoff beards, that's a hockey thing, all the way to the hoisting of the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. My God, so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code THPN. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777. That felt like a lot of numbers. Or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Visit ccdkng.com. It says .co. I'm assuming there's supposed to be an M there. /ice for eligibility and deposit restrictions. Terms and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. I hate when they switch up the ad read. You kind of you start to memorize part of it, and then you start stumbling because it's like a new line in there. West Virginia, I'm looking at you, but
West Virginia,
good song. About Western Maryland, but it's okay.
One of my all-time favorite TikToks or reels or whatever is a guy who has like a video of himself absolutely hammered off of his mind in a bar, and that song's playing in the background, and he's screaming. This song is not actually about West Virginia. It's about Western Virginia.
Some good stuff. I'll ask you guys who you'd go to in game three here in a sec, but I did like giving Swayman game one. I know Monty said afterward that it was partially just an organizational decision and the fact that he's been kind of one of their guys and is going to be the guy for the future the last few years and hadn't had a chance to start a series yet. So, in that sense, he's earned it, but I also liked it just from a confidence perspective. Like, I know, obviously, the situation that he was put into in Game 7 against Florida last season was pretty unfair, frankly. You know, you go six games without playing in the playoffs, you get stuck into a Game 7 pretty cold. And, you know, even for a guy who doesn't get rattled, which I would agree he is that, but he took that loss pretty hard. I don't think Game 7 was by any means his fault, but after the game, you know, he made comments about how he felt like he had let the team down, things like that. So I kind of like the idea of sticking him out there for game one. Don't give him any doubt that, oh, we're worried to start him in the playoffs. Like, just, you know, you're our guy. We are confident in you. We're going to run this rotation, but I like giving him game one. You've earned this, you know, kind of make good on that mistake from last season. I was happy with going to Omark game two. Like Chris said, it's worked all season. It's been the Bruins' strength. I don't think you go away from that. I don't think you can really go wrong either way for game three. I'll let you guys answer first, but, you know, which way are you leaning for starting up in Toronto?
I think you can go Swayman. I think it's whether you're keeping this every other or you're keeping the hot goaltender, not so to speak. Not that Ullmark was bad in game two at all. I don't think there you can blame that loss on him in any way. He was outstanding, and the goals he let up are the ones you'd expect, and I expected a lot more goals based on some of those opportunities. So the one point blank is a great example where it came out from whatever Bruin just decided to pass it to a Leaf in front. But I think you go Swayman either way. He won game one, and then also you're kind of on this every other aspect. And I really like that idea to keep it every other, honestly, unless it's like, okay, Swayman comes up with a shutout. Like if it's a 3-2 game, whatever, and Swayman has like a decent game, like it's not like, oh, my God, he was standing on his head or whatever. Then game four, you go back to Ullmark. I think the rest is great. I think it's a little bit of an experiment because we haven't seen it too much before. But for now, alternate. And then I think after this round is when you see that one will be more heavily used. But assuming they go on. But yeah. Game three, Swayman.
Yeah, I'm with you, Drew. I think I would amend just saying like Swayman is the only guy that I would start in back to back games. I just think
no.
Ullmark is a more injury prone guy, does better on longer rest. And yeah, if you went back to Ullmark in game three, there's 2 days off between games three and four, and then Swayman hasn't started for almost a week. So,
mm-hmm.
I guess it would be a week, Saturday to Saturday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it's a great schedule.
Yeah. I mean, Bruins and Celtics in the playoffs at the same time. You got to juggle that with all the concerts he's scheduled at the Garden. So,
yeah.
But it's sure. Like Bad Bunny is the.
He was in the middle of the playoff line.
I'll just finish off. I agree. I think you go to Sway. Again, I don't, I think, frankly, anybody who was like, oh, Ullmark didn't carry the team last night are probably the same people who thought that Tuukka Rask didn't carry the Bruins for a fucking decade.
Same mentality.
Just don't know hockey.
Scandinavian goaltenders. What the
yeah,
fuck?
Yeah. They fucking hate the Finnish long drink, but yeah, no, I thought both goalies were very good. I thought, frankly, Swayman was incredible in game one, so I think you have to give it to him. I think Ullmark was slightly a step below that, but still was probably the best player on the Bruins last night. Besides maybe Jesper Boqvist, because that dude just fucking... He turns it on, but...
So in game one, Boqvist had a kind of like rush attempt, and he was by himself with one defender, and I don't remember who the defender was, but it looked like he was very obviously interfered with. And you know how, like, you can kind of quote-unquote legally interfere with somebody? Like, you're not really making a play on the puck, and they kind of go for like a self pass or something, or they're like in the area and the defender kind of like jostles in their way. Not really, you know,
taking the space. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a boxing out.
This was like much more egregious than that. He got like very interfered with, and I was ready to start yelling at the TV. And then about 12 seconds later, he gets that pass to Johnny Beecher and
totally
made up for it. I'm okay with that.
Almost like Ryan Reeves holding one of our players in the bench and then us getting called for too many men on the ice because he was being held in the bench.
My favorite moment at the beginning of game two was game two. Yeah, it was when Lako got cross-checked in behind after the whistle, and then they just cut to the close-up of Lako looking at the ref and smiling because he knows a call's coming, and then the ref puts his arm up and he starts laughing and pointing at the guy.
I think scored it was, on that power play, right?
Yeah. I think that was the first goal of the game. Yeah. I think it was McCabe who took the penalty. Or was it Domi? No, Domi was the one who took the penalty against Coyle. So
yeah, it was McCabe. Yeah.
Domi was a little punk in game one.
Yeah.
But I think Domi took a penalty in game two as well, but it wasn't that one.
He also scored a goal in game two. So.
Yeah, so it makes up for that. You know, 2 minutes versus a goal.
As far as improvements, game three and zone exits got to be better. Too many giveaways in the D zone for me. And just chance creation. Again, I thought the forecheck was pretty good in game two, actually, for a lot of it. It's just, we would turn the puck over and then just couldn't really turn that into anything and into many high danger chances there, at least in the back half of the game. So, just a little more focus on each end. I thought the neutral zone play was actually decent, but got to be better. Fewer throwaways in the defensive zone and capitalizing a little more on the offensive side of the puck for me.
Yeah, I think it's that fight that they didn't show in game two, or at least towards the second half. I think that's the biggest thing. They were good enough in game one to beat them. Get back to that same mentality. I also think physicality. I think the Bruins do well when they're hitting. And I think I saw like a little bit of life at one point in the third period when they were down, and it was for a shift or two. And those were two like pretty physical shifts. Pastrnak threw like in open ice hit randomly. Like I was like, okay, they're trying to get back into this game and they, you know, doing it that way. And then that like let up the next couple shifts, and then they were back into this lull. So not that you can ride on your physicality, but I think staying physical, especially against this Leafs team, who, I mean, fuck them, are wimps in a lot of ways in terms of like the kind of character they have and that physicality, which is kind of the Bruins motto against Canadian teams for the most part.
I hope that gets clipped and retweeted onto Leafs Twitter so that we
get a lot more listens. I mean, they got what? They got
these fucking wimps.
Whoa,
they got
wait. You guys see Ryan Reeves skating on the red line pregame? I'll tell you,
any of them would kick the shit out of me, I'm sure. But compared to the Bruins,
maybe not Mitch Marner, if we're being honest.
Everybody keeps showing that clip of Marchand getting slashed in the back of the knee and then going down, being like, this is your captain, this is the guy that's supposed to be tough. But my favorite observation that was pretty much universal on Bruins Twitter from game one was the Leafs brand of physicality, which was, you know, all these like pylon defensemen that they traded for, and, you know, Ryan Reeves, a noted turnstile, willing to skate themselves out of position to make the hit, and that was what resulted in a few of the Bruins goals. So yes, Bruins keep that physicality up, but without playing into that kind of game, you know.
And Charlie Coyle, stop headbutting people's fists. Just also, like Marshy probably sold a little bit, but you've never been slashed in the back of the knee if you fucking are that upset about that shit. Hurts. There's no padding back there. It doesn't have to be that hard for it to.
One, you know, little housekeeping. Andrew Peake, I think he got hit with a puck in the hand.
Yeah.
So my guess is he just like absolutely shattered his hand because he's week to week or whatever.
What a wimp.
Week to week in the playoffs means that you have an injury that probably needs surgery. So Forbert is skating again. Lorai and Wotherspoon are available. Matt Grizzlick has been not great. What do you guys see?
Shattenkirk's been shit, dude.
Shattenkirk was
absolute shit. Like I was surprised.
Heard that as well. Didn't see it. Shattenkirk was okay in game one.
Shattenkirk, there was a moment where, like, not that I'm like, you gotta go down and block a shot, because I would not just go down and block a shot.
In the playoffs, you kind of gotta go down.
And there was this point
Lauko in the final second of the 5-1 game one. I was like, brother, what are we doing here? Like, come on.
He's eating pucks, Cam.
Shattenkirk, there was a point, and it was one of the Toronto goals. And I forget exactly which Toronto player scored it, but basically the puck came out off a rebound or deflection or whatever to a Toronto player kind of in the high slot, and Shattenkirk's there, and he like turns sideways like the like NHL Player Association logo, like get ready to block it. And it's like, if you go down to block it, or even if you stick your stick out, like make a play on the shot. Like somehow, but he kind of just like froze caveman style, or caveman style, Bigfoot style, same thing, you know. And there were a lot of moments that he just didn't look great. So hopefully he can go back in game three, because you're right, Chris. I think he was pretty good in game one.
But yeah, I mean, I didn't think when the trade deadline came through, I'd be saying, damn, what are the Bruins going to do without Andrew Peake? But yeah. I thought he's been pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, Cam.
Thank you.
What is it, the big 2-7?
No.
Big 2-6?
That's the one.
There you go. I always forget if you're the year and a half or the 2.5 year younger than me.
I think at least. I kind of lost count after 23, if we're being honest.
Or half a year.
But, yeah.
How old am I? I'm 27. I'm going to be 28.
That's got to happen sometimes.
You Chris, how old are you? Do you remember off the top of your head? Don't think about it.
33.
Took you a little bit, but, you know, we're there.
Charlotte, the big reach. What a huge pirouette. And the big man scores. An incredible move. 6-9, and he's a ballerina. It's 2-0 Bruins.
Oh, that's why Jack Edwards was a fucking legend. That's just some good stuff.
6-9, and he's a ballerina.
He's not dead, Cam.
He's dead to me now that he's retiring.
I was going to say something. I thought the pause was better.
I disagree with Jack Edwards' decision to retire. I think he should just keep going. All right. I guess that's a wrap. Cam, go get in your birthday soup and have a good time.
All right, Drew.
I almost accidentally said soup. Go get in your birthday soup. Just hop in the pot. Let's go. I'm Drew. We got Cam. We got Chris. So long and good night.
Go Bees.
Go Bees.